D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3. The game, Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Joined, as we are every Wednesday, by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. So, Hutton, in the first hour,
yes, sir,
we had a spirited discussion on how we would define a dynasty in the wake of the Florida Panthers winning their second consecutive Stanley Cup, two Stanley Cups in three seasons, and a final appearance in the year that they did not win the Stanley Cup. My friend Mark Lazarus of The Athletic, he has a very rigid definition. He says that you have to win three consecutive titles in order to be considered a dynasty. Mine is not as rigid, and I actually was able to convince Derek of my definition, which is that you have to win at least three championships within a five-year span in order to be considered a dynasty. How would you define it, and are the Florida Panthers a dynasty?
See, I was no, not yet. I would say, man, so let's say the Chiefs got to 3 and 4, right? And yep, they won two of the three, but they got to three Super Bowls in 4 years. That was, to me, that was the run that they were going on a dynasty run. I think it's, man, it's right there for me, and especially in hockey. So I was very quick to say no. They are as close as any sport to win back-to-back and have the appearances that you're talking about and not be. But I think it's three, and I think it's over a span of about 4 to 5 years, yeah. And I think it's about the appearances and how close you are. Not if you lose, but how you lose the one and then what you do in the other two and how dominant
well,
you are.
Well, that beats Willie's definition, uh-huh. I think.
So you're like me, Hutton. You're not going to be pinned down by rigid definitions. It's a little bit more of you know it when you see it, right?
Yeah, yes, you do. But it again, it's also three. I think it's three appearances in 5 years, 4 years. But again, like it's not like you limped into it and had like a backup quarterback play in one of those three, right? Like it is the consistency, and I also think just again the schedule and the grueling grind that is the NHL, especially in that tournament, I think they're right there, and you can make the case for the NHL.
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't vote that way though.
And we were discussing like, okay, can it include like just if not the three-peat or the 3 and 5 years, can it involve, you know, dominance within your conference? Because we brought up the Atlanta Braves and how they were dominant for a long time, but it only equated to one or two World Series.
One World Series.
So are they considered a dynasty? Yeah, they dominated, but ultimately they didn't win it all.
Far down the totem pole here. I got to get pretty far down to get to divisions instead of championship, division titles. Like I mean, if we're only talking, you know, dynasties of a division, you know, like that, but I don't think we ever get to that debate at the bar. So if we're just going by bar rules, this is titles. This is titles, baby. And it's about producing when it matters and for the championship and not the, not the regional, but the championship, the title.
Now, Hutt, we're going to discuss Diego Pavia, in a little bit, but I want to ask you about it because obviously, I'm sure you've heard or either saw his interview on Bustin' with the Boys and his bravado and his stance on, you know, who he is as an athlete and who he believes the Vanderbilt Commodores, you know, ultimately will be as a team. What do you think of this confidence? Because we haven't seen this in Vandy at all. Since I followed Vandy, I haven't seen a guy so confident in what he can do, and not just that, but confident in the program that he's in.
I think it's imperative that Vanderbilt has that guy. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly. And he chooses Vandy. And I don't care what he says or how confident he is, the dude stayed. So I mean, he could have gone anywhere he wanted to, and he stayed. I'm glad he's that confident. I love it, and the fact that he went to Clark Lea and said, "Hey, I'm your guy. We're gonna time to win some titles," and then had the year that they had out of nowhere. It really felt out of nowhere. coming off of the schedule that they were off of, and then to see what they were up against, and then to have that first win against Virginia Tech, and then off and running they were. I don't think it's a bad thing at all, and quite frankly, college football could use more of him.
Well, here from a Vanderbilt perspective,
am I wrong on that?
Well, I think in terms of characters, we love characters like this. But Vanderbilt.
Willie, what about staying though? What about being confident and staying? We're talking about Vanderbilt here. Just in general at quarterback. I'm saying
no question. And I go back a couple of years. I really wish Jerry Stackhouse might still be the coach if he could have gotten Scottie Pippen to buy into that and stay for one more year. Because I think that would have been a very good Vanderbilt team with Scottie Pippen, especially now we're seeing. But Scottie Pippen decided to just leave and go pro. He probably could have done the let me cash in and just be the one-year guy for NIL, which he didn't do. But here from a Vanderbilt perspective is what I would worry about a little bit.
Sure.
He snuck up on people last year. The team snuck up on people. They're not going to do that again. They weren't going to, regardless of what he said on this podcast.
That's right.
Now, especially what he said, and that is a precarious thing. It's like me as a Met fan, I know how much the Braves have dominated the Mets over the last few decades, and so I will never sit there and go, ha, the Braves, they're done. The Mets have got them. I will never, ever say that. And last night was a great example. The Mets had the game won. Braves snuck up and went. And I'm worried that the Braves – they've jump-started the Braves season. The Braves are too talented. They could be back in the mix. So I'm always wary for Vanderbilt. I always think the adage, and I remember my baseball coaches and basketball coaches would share this to both teams. These are two completely different teams, different sports, but they would say the same thing. We can't afford to sit here and think that we're good because we've had some success here. Because we're not more talented than a lot of the teams we're playing. So if we allow ourselves to believe that, that's when we're going to get nailed. We're going to get beat by teams that we shouldn't be beaten by. We have to always be understanding that we have to play and click on all cylinders to be effective. And so I love the swagger of Pavia, but I hope he understands that he can't just think, hey, we were good last year. I could have made $4 million by going somewhere else, so we must be really good, because that's the trap.
I would be I'm 1,000% on board with you, but I have the evidence of last year. They beat Bama, and they turned around and went on the road and beat Kentucky. And that entire week, they did national interview after national interview.
Fair.
Pavia was a national headline. He's on Dan Patrick's show on a Thursday, and he's showing up, and he turns around and has that locker room ready to go. To go on the road and beat Kentucky, that to me is the difference. The week of that game, fans weren't taking that lightly. You know, they didn't sneak up on Tennessee last year. You know, like the feeling of that week. Oh, we just can't lose this game. Just take care of it. That to me is that's the difference in Pavia, and that's the difference in having that guy at Vandy. I'm totally fine with the argument. We can't have the guy that's like locker room bulletin board material, but I'm glad that Vanderbilt has that player that has everybody turning their heads. And, they did it to Auburn. You know, he's going for the Iron Bowl. Mm-hmm. He's talking that trash on the – I mean, again, that was the storyline last year, and he handled it really well.
And did it while he was hurt. Yeah.
And had the entire locker room gravitates towards him, and he's not like, I don't think he lets up he's dialed in even when he's getting all the hype. That was impressive to me. And again, I think it would have been very, very difficult for any team to beat Alabama, especially the way they did in the historical manner that they did, and turn around and go on the road at Kentucky and not have a little letdown. And they went on it was a totally different game. And they were able to grind that game out. I thought that was impressive.
Hutton, I do want to ask you about something related to the WNBA. The Indiana Fever and Connecticut Sun last night had what I would describe as a chippy contest, to say the least. And, you know, once again, Caitlin Clark is at the center of it all. And I was reading a column in the Washington Post by Candace Buckner with the headline, Caitlin Clark, a night of skirmishes and a WNBA product out of control. And
out of control.
Buckner writes in part, quote, after a night of physical fouls and hurt feelings, the WNBA clearly has an officiating problem. Clark is the crossover celebrity. If officiating ever allows her to get injured, then the scariest place on earth just might be among the casuals rioting outside the league office. But it shouldn't take unbridled anger to awaken the WNBA. The league has a problem, and it better fix it before the whole product turns foul. Your thoughts?
Oh, man. Okay. First part. The league, it sits back and lets this go on because this is like the Angel Reese 2.0, where the physical nature, the column of this is more of a headline than the discussion of this is more of a headline than the actual result of the game. The final score is not discussed. It's more or less like, are they going after Caitlin Clark?
Yes.
It's not an officiating problem. They would, if the league didn't want this, the officials would officiate this different. But again, it's clear they're being very physical with her. I would say this, though. At some point, Caitlin Clark has to fight back. And then we start to see the real – at what point does she stand up and just pop somebody after this? I mean, we haven't seen that yet.
We have not.
Do you guys agree with this, though, that I think – and it's getting talked about at the college level as well – that women's basketball, because the athletes continue to evolve – at a rapid rate with height, with strength, it just the genetics of the whole thing. It's moving fast, and I think it's making it a tricky game to officiate. Do you guys think so? Like I
had not thought about that.
20 or 30 years ago, the players were not as tall. Like there weren't people dunking. There weren't people who were 6'7", 6". You know, there's just a dilemma that I think you have, and it happens in men's basketball, of course, but I think it's there's not as much aerial stuff. So there's a lot of contact where you have to make some tricky decisions. And I think it sometimes gets lumped into we have an officiating problem. I just think it's a hard game to officiate.
Basketball, that's why, you know, Shaquille O'Neal had such a problem because you had to officiate him differently. You know, a foul for Shaq.
Right, he was on the cutting edge. There had never been a player like that.
Absolutely.
Before.
So when you foul, what may seem like a hard foul may have just been to Shaq, it felt like just a fly on me. and if Shaq didn't fall or do something, the refs didn't know how to call
it. Right. I will tell you exactly what our coach coached us to do against Shaq because he was a bad free throw shooter. This was at LSU. Vanderbilt beat them twice. I was on the team both times. 0 points in the two games. one assist. I had a nice little run off, a nice little section off the bench in one of the games we beat them. Nice job by me. But good role play. I don't know what my plus minus was. But here, this was the – we would strategically, when he caught the ball on what we would call the medium post – or on the low post, on the low post. So if he got the ball on the block, we knew that – he would turn and dunk the ball. We did not have anybody who, if he caught the ball that deep, you couldn't prevent him from dunking. So we would try to push him out to the medium post where he had to hit a jump hook, and he was pretty good at that, but you at least had a chance. Exactly. And we had a couple guys that were pretty good at doing it. Nobody was as big. But we were instructed, if he catches the ball in the low post, quote, take his arm off.
You had to.
You had
it's
to.
So big. Because you can't just foul him.
He would just take you right up to the rim and dunk you. Yeah. You could, if you kind of just tried to strip of the ball, you had no chance. So you had to take his arm off. That changed the officiating.
And
right
I think
there.
That's what's going on with women's sports. It's they haven't, you know, seen, you know, people don't look at basketball, women's basketball, and think physicality. Well, they are physical. And just because you don't want it to be physical doesn't mean they are not. And you got to officiate the game based on the girls that are out there now and the physicality that they have now. And when it comes to Caitlin Clark, I think it's just what we would deem as just a regular foul in the NBA. It's deemed as, oh, they're trying to take her out. They're trying to do this. She's a physical player. She matches physicality with physicality. And a lot of times she flops or she gets fouled hard. But we can't say that. I don't think the WNBA has a problem. I think they're allowing these girls to be physical because nobody wants to see a finesse game. They just don't, especially because they tried the finesse game with the NBA. It didn't work. I mean, WNBA. It didn't work. Luckily, Caitlin Clark came along, and her shooting, along with the other physicality of the sport, has elevated it, more so her shooting. But the game is a little bit physical now, and they got to play her physical because if they don't, it's going to be threes raining across the gym all day and every day, and they understand that.
I'm all for the physical. I'm all for that, Mace. Last night was different, you know, with what that was. Look, I would say this about Shaq. Shaq would still – there were instances where it was tough to officiate Shaquille O'Neal. Mm-hmm. Shaq still got up and went after Charles Barkley after a tough foul. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, there was some animosity there. There were the Jordan rules. Yeah, the best player in the league. There were the Jordan rules. They're protect their own. I just think at some point Clark's going to have to say something or get up and do something if it's this egregious. And let me also be fair. She talks trash.
Oh, of course.
So there are verbal jabs that you don't hear that, you know, that are going to play a factor in this. It's part of the game, but also like, you know, if the league wants to curtail this, they could. It's not like they couldn't do something about this with fines and end it. I mean, fines in that league mean something. So I just think like last night with the, you know, the different, you know, the hip checked and then you have the shoulder and then you have the behind, whatever it was. It's a storyline that it is good for the league. It is. It's either Angel Reese and the rivalry there, or it's Caitlin Clark and whether or not the players hate her, or now it's the officials are out, you know, they're too, now the league does. It's all peripheral things that are about her game. She's very good. Well, she's second in the league right now in the odds to win the MVP. The ratings are what they are. She is the league in terms of the hype. So, I mean, if you want the perception of, well, they're protecting her because she's the league, I think this is actually making it more likely people tune in again because you want to see the brawl for all. But again, the rivalry with Angel Reese continues because she got up the way she did after a take foul. If she stays on the floor and just like doesn't do anything, it's just kind of okay. We're not talking about anything with that game. We're talking about Caitlin Clark being 4-1 head to head against her. That's pretty much it. That keeps it going. And so does this. That's where I come across on it. If they wanted to just split it in half and take half of the physical nature of what we saw out, they could. But you know, they let that game go a little bit, clearly, for it to rise to that amount of friction.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us, as he does every Wednesday on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Hutton, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, I think, guys, do we have any other update on the WNBA in Tennessee with what we saw like last fall with the announcement? You ever heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything.
No.
There hasn't really been a whole lot. No. I heard Stephen A. Smith just – in a long rant that did not have to do directly with the WNBA. He was talking about Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned it, that they're trying to get it. But it seems like this wave clearly is not happening. But I think in time, when there's another wave, that there'll be another run.
Yeah, and they have to expand. They don't have enough teams. But he's saying like the Memphis is trying to get a team in FedEx Forum, right?
Yeah.
That's what Stephen A. was saying. Okay,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Hutton? I think it would be here. Or Clarksville. Throwing out there.
We'll chat next week, Hutton.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We mentioned Diego Pavia. He had a lot to say in an interview with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton on Bussin' with the Boys, and we'll discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.